So you know the Netflix documentary Drive to Survive,
which was brilliant, yeah,
which was really good. Yeah, yeah. So last season when they did it, Ferrari and Mercedes didn't take part. This year, because obviously they're filming during the 2019 season for Series 2, Ferrari and Mercedes have agreed. Mercedes agreed on one stipulation, that they were only allowed to follow the team with their cameras and get really behind the scenes in one race this season. Do you know which race it was?
Go on.
The German Grand Prix.
Of course it was.
It's lights out and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Down the inside they have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two Soft Compounds.
Welcome to Two Soft Compounds. I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And what an amazing German Grand Prix. I literally don't know even where to start. That's three in a row we've had now. Three crackers.
Yeah, our friend Nicky at Lights Out has voted via his poll the best Grand Prix of the last 10 seasons or something like that. I mean, it was just amazing, wasn't it? It had everything. It had everything for everyone, no matter which team you support, which driver you back. It had something for everyone. In the whole weekend, in fact, you know, Gasly crashed in qualifying and there was some impressive time set by the Ferraris, and then the absolute nightmare of qualifying that they had with Vettel sitting out and Leclerc not putting a time in Q3. So, loads to talk about. I don't know where you want to start, really.
Well, I mean, like you say, just so much to cover. It's unbelievable, isn't it? But literally, probably one of the best Grand Prix I've ever seen. I've had a lot of people come up to me since saying, see, you know, it's great, isn't it, when it's wet? And it's like, well, you can't predict the rain. That's the only thing. So the old Bernie sprinkler thing's coming back up again, isn't it? And in a weird way, I saw someone write on Twitter, wouldn't it be quite good if we had half the track with sprinklers and the other half without? And, you know, I mean, that's a crazy idea. But at the same time, I mean, imagine how much that would spice things up. Because these guys couldn't even keep it on the tarmac, could they, when it was properly raining? But if you've got, you know, intermediate tyres on and half the track's dry and half's wet, and it would really spice things up, wouldn't it? Or slicks the other way around. But just, you know, where do you even start? Phenomenal race.
I thought the FIA and the stewards were quite sensible this weekend during the race. First of all, they allowed us for the first standing start in the wet. So they followed the pace car for a few laps, which they'd often done in the past, but then started under the pace car, if you like, with a rolling start. But we got a standing start, so I thought that was a sensible decision. And then after that, I thought the stewarding was quite good. When they had safety cars, they got whatever they were clearing off the track sorted pretty quickly so we could get back to racing. And they were pretty good on the penalty point. I saw a lot of controversy about this when Ferrari got a team fine for unsafe release of Charles Leclerc. And when it happened in the race, I thought, oh, here we go again. Ferrari are just screwing things up. I thought it was quite a good thing that the team got the fine because it didn't impeach on the brilliant racing spectacle that was unfolding in front of us. So I thought that was a positive thing. I've seen things on forums where people say, no, consistency means that the driver should have taken the penalty. And I don't agree with that. I think the stewards got it right.
Yeah, and I think that is a team mistake, isn't it, really? So it should be the team that gets punished and not the driver as such. I feel like they've backed off the stewards since the Vettel-Hamilton thing. I feel like that was, got a lot of hoo-ha about that, a lot of complaining online. And I think the stewards have either been told to or have naturally just backed off a little bit and allowed a bit more racing and allowed, you know, other stuff like that to happen and just go down correctly. Like you say, you know, if you're going to punish someone for an unsafe release, it's not the driver's fault. They're sitting there waiting for the green light to go. You can't punish them, but you can punish the team. That's fair.
Scott and Rick are the Two Soft Compounds.
So let's go through it then. Standing start, not behind a safety car, as I mentioned. All the teams on full wet tyres at that point. Max Verstappen's start was woeful. And it just goes to show, every time he has a bad start in a fairly good place on the grid, he tends to go on and win, because that's exactly what happened in Austria. But he got bogged down completely. It looked as though he was going nowhere at the first 4 or 5 seconds of the starting phase.
I saw a few clips of the Red Bull, the onboard camera, and there was a really weird clicking sound with it's obviously the Honda engine, but I wasn't noticing it when any of the other engines, and obviously there was no problem with the engine, but it was a really weird, almost a grinding noise. And it, you know, when you hear something, you think that doesn't sound healthy at all. Obviously it wasn't a problem, but I don't know what that was that's different to the other team's engines.
We got a couple of laps into the race. Perez spins, brings out the first safety car, and this was where on lap three, Vettel came in for Inters. Hamilton came in for Inters the following lap. That was also at the point when we had the unsafe release with Leclerc on Grosjean. I was just about to sound the Grosjean trip alarm in my house, but of course it wasn't his fault. Leclerc was released right in front of him. So that was the first phase almost, and they started settling down on the intermediate tyres. And then the exciting thing for me was that they were struggling with grip on the inters, especially on the last two corners on the drag strip piece of tarmac, which was incredibly slippery. Then we go to lap 15. Ricciardo's engine blows. Leclerc made a brilliant strategy decision, or his team did, Ferrari did for once, and he was able to pit under the virtual safety car, which basically gave him a free pit stop. And then after that, we start to get into the phase where different drivers and different teams are taking a gamble on slick tyres, and this is where it all goes completely awry, because they go on slicks obviously far too early. I think Magnussen was the first person to go on slicks on lap 23. All kinds of chaos happened after that. That was when we had Verstappen do his 360 when he went on to mediums, not the softs. Just loads of drama all over the place.
I think the beauty of that as well is they were changing the tyres and they weren't quite sure which was the correct tyres. So they went on to slicks, or some of them did, like you say, and then some of them were like, no, we need to come back in and put inters back on. It's too wet for slicks. Other teams were okay with slicks. But literally, you know, you do a lap on slicks. I think, like you say, Magnussen did a lap and everyone was like, oh, okay, he's doing all right. Let's put slicks on. But then it started raining again. So the minute they put the slicks on, they were too slick and then they needed to put the intermediates back on. But that was the beauty of it. I think Verstappen did 5 stops in total, didn't he? And this is what's great. They're in and out and different tyres. And this is exactly what we're talking about with the rule changes. They need to manufacture things that create these situations that, you know, the best example I can think of is the Mercedes pit stop, which, you know, I'm sure you'll come to in a bit. But, to see the team literally throwing their hands in the air going, yeah, we've not got a nose cone. We've got Bottas's tyres. We need Hamilton's tyres. What tyres? Are we intermediates? And I think they put a slick on the left, the front left, and an intermediate on the front right. And then the slick come off and the intermediate come off. And I thought it was very wonderful of Mercedes. They were celebrating, obviously, the old, you know, the 125 years of the team and all that sort of stuff. I thought it was very nice that they're all dressed up in the 50s gear and all that. And I thought it was very nice that they did a 50s pit stop. It took a couple of minutes.
Yeah,
I thought
exactly
they just
right.
kept it all on brand all weekend, didn't they?
Leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
Majority of the front runners had gone onto slicks and tried to gamble. Then the clerk goes off and obviously he's frustrated. He can't move. He's beached in the gravel. And this brings out another full safety car. A lot of people didn't notice was that Hamilton went off the following lap under the safety car.
Mm. And I will say this, I did see this on Twitter, someone mentioned this, in the lower formulas, that is the worst thing you can do. And I've accidentally overtaken somebody on a yellow flag in a MR2 race. There was an accident that was miles off the circuit, it was in Silverstone. I recognised the car and I thought it was my friend, so I was looking to see whose car it was. So I got on the right of the track on the outside and I passed the car, but I was kind of like level with them, but just slightly past them. And obviously the marshal saw it and flagged it up at the end. And I got 4 racing points on my license for that. I lost the position in that race and I had to start the next race at the back of the grid. So I was punished heavily for that. And that was just passing a car on the outside, which is how it should be, because that's the whole point of yellow flags is, you know, marshals on track, slow down. So yeah, there's a lot of people saying that, you know, if that was a junior formula, they would have been heavily punished for that.
So I couldn't believe it. I mean, they came up with a penalty going too slowly under the safety car. Well, if anything, he was going too fast because he came off the track during a safety car, which, like you say, is a massive offence.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came off at the same place. If there had been a tractor on recovering Leclerc's car, he could have easily gone into that and easily gone into Marshall's. And then he gets back on. Now, I've heard team radio since that wasn't on the TV coverage. As soon as he goes off there and he clips his front wing off, he says, box, box, box on the radio. And they very calmly say, OK, box, confirmed, copy. We see what's happened. Which tyres would you like? Inters? And he says, yes, inters. Then they come in for the pit stop and all hell breaks loose. One half of the team thinks he wants slicks. And that's just massive non-communication going on in the team. And like you say, they've recreated a pit stop from 1954.
Which was very wonderful of them. But the fact he came in, he got punished for not going around the bollard, didn't he, coming into the pit lane. If you look at where he comes back on, he would have had to have gone backwards down the racetrack to go around the bollard, you know, facing the traffic, which would be insane.
But the other teams would say, well, if he's missed the bollard, he should do a full circuit of the track and then come into the pits. Yep. And that's obviously why he got the 5-second
And maybe
penalty.
He should have, yeah, maybe he should have done exactly that.
So after the safety car period where Hamilton makes that atrocious pit stop and they all get back to racing again, at this point Stroll is plumb last in the racing point. Completely last. Even the Williams cars are ahead of Stroll at this point. A great way of doing this was to fast forward the race on your TiVo box and look at the positions of the drivers on the left-hand side of the screen and see the way Stroll starts making inroads and then makes that amazing strategy call, which is obviously between him and the team. On lap 45, they make the first call to go back to slicks, and that transforms the entire race for Stroll. He's suddenly in the lead when the rest of them come in.
Two soft compounds.
And some interesting things happening behind all this. Albon overtaking Gasly. I think that happened two or three times during the race, and that's not good for Gasly. We've spoken many times. And after his crash earlier in the weekend and his subsequent attempted overtake of, or re-overtake of Albon and ripping his front wing off, he can't be long in that team, can he?
It's a big statement, isn't it? I feel like Red Bull being Red Bull are going to do one of the usuals, and I feel like we're going to get either Albon or Kvyat replace Gasly. They're both interesting, aren't they? Because Kvyat's had a go in the Red Bull and didn't perform. He's doing basically what Gasly was doing, so they replaced him. So do you go with Albon and give someone fresh a go, you know, hoping that he might be another Max in a Red Bull? Or do you go back to Kvyat because he's better than Gasly, but still not another Max in their mind? Or do you get someone new in? They've got some great potential drivers, but no one's quite ready for that seat. And like I say, Kvyat had a go. Was it too early? Do you give him a second go and go, okay, well, listen, you've reinvented your career a bit, have another go in the Red Bull? Do you give it to Albon? What do you do there if you're Red Bull?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Albon. I like him off the track. He seems like a really nice bloke who's
quite mature. Well,
yeah. His driving style is very mature as well. I mean, he got caught out in a couple of times during the German Grand Prix when he was overtaken by Sainz, and then he got boxed in, and he was at one point trying to re-overtake Hamilton, who'd made an error, and he kind of got boxed in there. But I think he's a driver who's developing all the time. He's certainly matured as a driver throughout this season, where Gasly seems to have started badly, never really improved, and has now gone downhill again.
Gasly, I feel like, has got inside his own head. He's made a few mistakes, and then he's got in an unconfident position, and it's spiraling in his own head. You know, when he made that overtake, it was a crazy, he swung out and he just hit his wing, and then he's just swearing on the radio. And it's one of those things, again, it was very Verstappen-like, where he made the mistake, tried to blame everybody else. I think he said he pulled across me or something like that. It's like, yeah. Well, he was just on the racing line. He didn't pull across you at all. You know, and he's making very, very basic errors. And I feel like I said, he's in his own head, and he's spiraling that himself out of control.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
Lap 53, Hamilton takes a spin on turn one and then subsequently comes in because he's flat spotted his tyres. That's when he gets a 5-second penalty. So suddenly we're with a scenario where Hamilton's in plumb last place, which is amazing. Then from that point onwards, Bottas is behind Stroll and he's trying to overtake him. I've said this before and people have criticised me for saying it. I don't think Bottas is a very good overtaker. He spent three or so laps behind Stroll and could not make an inroad there. He's not the sort of driver that lunges. Verstappen is properly that sort of driver who will lunge one down the inside. Ricciardo's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Bottas just isn't. He may have had a power problem in the car. We don't know if there was a technical reason why he couldn't close the gap on Stroll. But I thought it was quite frightening to see his pace behind the Racing Point car. And then, of course, he overtries and puts it in the wall at turn one.
Yeah, and I think we've mentioned this before, where each team seems to have a superstar driver and a definite number two at the moment. Bottas is a definite number two to Hamilton, obviously. But he's got to be careful because they're going to be making the decision soon to whether they replace him with Ocon next year. And I do think over the summer break, there's going to be some interesting, announcements and some changes. There's some good drivers waiting in the wings for some good seats. Bottas for me is a Coulthard. He's not a bad driver. He is a race winner,
yeah,
and he's up there with the better drivers, but he's not a superstar driver. He's not a world champion. You can see it with Max, and Gasly is the best example. Leclerc is very much on a par with Vettel and would be a future world champion in my eyes. Max, future world champion in my eyes. I can see Norris as a future world champion. I can see Albon as a future world champion, but there's other drivers that you think you've either had your chance, like a Hülkenberg. He still didn't get his podium, did he, Hülkenberg? You either have your chance and you don't get there, or you're just never going to get there. There's a place for a solid number two. Schumacher era at Ferrari was a great example where you know, Schumacher worked best with a solid number two, and actually to not rock the boat, you have a solid number two to just pick up any points that Schumacher doesn't get. But Schumacher's your star driver. The situation you've got at Ferrari now is Vettel and Leclerc are very even. Either of those two could be going for the world title. Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes they push each other, other times they take each other off, Prost and Senna being a great example.
What are your feelings on Leclerc? Because I know we've got a lot of Leclerc fans that listen to this podcast. I'm thinking of Baku, where he binned it when he was clearly going for the pole position in qualifying. We've seen other instances where he's lost it under pressure. We've seen that plenty from Vettel this season, of course. He was the cool head in the German Grand Prix, Vettel. Leclerc, though, blaming the asphalt on the runoff area, which is the drag strip start. Everyone else had to cope with the same situation. Some of them binned it there and many of them didn't. He seems to be a perfectionist, but he's letting that pressure get to him in crucial moments. And that's the difference. I've no doubt that Leclerc could be a future world champion, but at the moment, his driving style is not mature enough, in my opinion.
He's trying too hard, like you say, and in my opinion, he's going to get a win this season. It's going to come this season. And when he gets a win, I think it will transform him as a driver, because he needs to get that elephant off his back. He's so desperate for that first win. He's so desperate to prove that they made the right choice employing him. And he's so desperate to prove that he needs to be in that Ferrari long term that he's overdriving. He's trying too hard.
Scott and Rick are the two soft compounds.
Grosjean and Magnussen bump into each other again. Yay!
Do we need the Grosjean trip alarm?
Yeah,
here?
Go on. Why not? Grosjean trip alarm.
Grosjean trip alarm. Grosjean trip alarm.
He's having a stinker, isn't he? Let's be honest, Grosjean. Did you see the radio call as well that happened after this, which I found fascinating and very kind of eye-opening? Magnussen said, and this was his quote, "Think about what you want to do, because I'm not really happy racing this guy."
Yeah.
That, to me, was a radio call of, it's him or me now. You've got to fire one of us because this isn't working. You've got to look at Grosjean being the wobbly one. I mean, they've both had incidences, but you would say that Magnussen is the more stable, kind of reliable driver that brings home the points. Grosjean is the, you know, as we saw when he's spanning the pit lane, Grosjean is the unpredictable one of the two.
Yeah.
But again, he's another one. I feel like he's had his chance and he's just not quite gone up that level. And, you know, is it time for him to go to Formula E, which is the rumour that he's signed to go to Formula E next year? Is it time for him to go to another team? You know, they need to do something, because that's
not
going
well. Is it time for him to go back to go-karts? Also in the same lap, Bottas out. So that brings out the final safety car of the afternoon. I think it's four safety cars we had and three virtual safety cars. It was just nuts. So overall, a brilliant race. Kvyat, of course, who we haven't talked about, finishing on the podium in third place and doing a fantastic job for Toro Rosso the night after his little baby daughter was born.
Had a great weekend, didn't he?
There were some real stars to come out of it, I think. Raikkonen, Giovinazzi, obviously they got the impediment or the penalty after the race.
Yeah, but that was clutch infringement, whatever that means.
Yeah, so I think, so that basically the rule says that the pit lane are not allowed to advise the drivers how to drive the car.
Yeah.
And because they were doing a standing start in the wet, there was a radio communication to both drivers telling them what to set their clutch at.
Right.
Which apparently they're not allowed to do.
Okay.
So they can practice in the simulator, but they can't be reminded of which setting to use to get off the line properly. And I think that's what the infringement was.
Okay.
Red Bull, I think, did a brilliant job. They performed the fastest pit stop in the world ever.
Yes,
in
I
wet
saw that,
conditions.
Yeah. 1.88 seconds, was it? I mean,
1.88.
I can't blink that quickly.
And this was in a busy pit lane when there was chaos all around them. As you said, Max had been in five times and they still managed to perform like that. I think that's a great measure of a really good team who's all firing on all cylinders. And I think Red Bull have definitely stepped their game up. It was just an amazing race, which had a bit of everything for everyone, I think. It was really enjoyable.
Yeah, and it just goes to show, like we've said before, you know, a bit of rain, a few unpredictabilities, you know, the odd crash like Hamilton had and they're not ready for the nose cone and the tyres. You know, a few little things like that and it just completely transforms the race. My concern now is that's three brilliant races in a row and this has got to end at some point. We're going to get potentially a very boring Hungarian Grand Prix.
You can have boring Hungarian Grand Prix. We've seen them before. It's often a processional race. I think Hamilton and Bottas will be pretty much on top for Hungary.
Right, let's get some Germany post-race stats from our stats man. You can find him on Twitter, @LightsOut. His name is Nicky. He's got a brilliant blog, which you can see online as well. And let's get some post-race stats from him right now.
From Honda's best race in 27 years to Alfa Romeo's best qualifying in 34 years, here are five of the best statistics from the 2019 German Grand Prix weekend. Despite his 360 spin, Max Verstappen was unbeatable in the wet conditions. He recorded his seventh F1 win, becoming the 23rd different driver to win at Hockenheim. Surprisingly, it was also Red Bull's first win at the track, making them the 10th team to be victorious at Hockenheim. With his gain of 18 places from last on the grid to a second place finish, Sebastian Vettel made the 2019 German Grand Prix the 87th occasion where a driver has gained 18 or more places during an F1 race. With this being his 50th podium finish for Ferrari, Vettel is now the only driver in Formula 1 history to have scored 50 podium finishes with two different teams. He finished on the podium 65 times with Red Bull. One of the most surprising results from the weekend was Danny Kvyat's third place finish for Toro Rosso. It marked the team's first podium since Sebastian Vettel won the 2008 Italian Grand Prix and Kvyat's first top three finish since the 2016 Chinese Grand Prix. This race is also the first time two Honda-powered cars have finished on the podium since Gerhard Berger and Ayrton Senna finished second and third for McLaren at the 1992 Portuguese Grand Prix. After both Alfa Romeo drivers were handed post-race penalties, another surprise result from the weekend was Robert Kubica scoring his first point since the 2010 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. It was also the first time Williams have scored a point since the 2018 Italian Grand Prix. With Valtteri Bottas retiring from Mercedes, Williams are now the only team yet to record a DNF in 2019. And finally, before they picked up their penalties, Alfa Romeo were having a great weekend and were set for a double points finish. On Saturday, Kimi Raikkonen recorded his best qualifying result since leaving Ferrari, with 5th on the grid. It's the first time an Alfa Romeo driver has qualified in the top 5 since Eddie Chiva lined up 4th on the grid at the 1985 Monaco Grand Prix.
Check out twosoftcompounds.com for the latest news, competitions and updates.
Thank you, Nicky. You can find him at Lights Out on Twitter. He'll be back with some post-race stats for us for the Hungarian Grand Prix, which of course happens this weekend. Normally we'd preview that, but it's a quick turnaround this week, straight into the Hungarian Grand Prix. So we'll be back next week to review that race. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll get another cracker. I got a funny feeling that, like you say, I think Red Bull have definitely come along a little bit. I think Verstappen's going to be in the mix. He's on a bit of a run now, isn't he? And I think, you know, we'll see the likely return of Hamilton. Vettel's got a bit of confidence now as well after his second as well. So it'd be an interesting race. Fingers crossed it won't be a boring one.
So yeah, next Tuesday for the podcast, we'll be talking about the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Have a good week. We'll see you next week.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.